Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. Here
happy
on this Halloween
Monday.
Evening. I'm glad to...
And happy Halloween, that's right.
Show. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we've chosen... what some consider a very scary topic for our Halloween
right.
program, although, and I gave it a scary title, at least a callback to a scary phrase. We're calling it nuclear options. And of course, the nuclear option is a phrase that dates back to the Cold War, referring to using nuclear weapons as kind of a last resort in any military situation. But that's not what I mean. That's not what we're talking about tonight when we talk about nuclear options. We're going to talk about different scenarios by which we arrive at a nuclear-powered future. And I think, there is a lot of good stuff there, and it doesn't get discussed much. So I think the way we're going to do this, because really you put the outline together for this one, Stephen, but if I'm not mistaken, we're going to work this from kind of the near term to the longer term, right? From the technology
That's right.
we could be doing now, are doing now, to the technology that's coming up. And you're kind of our nuclear expert, aren't you?
I don't even know if I can pronounce the word correctly.
Well, let's hear. Let's
our former president was made fun of President Bush was made fun of because he couldn't pronounce the word nuclear. And I, for the life of me, I was going, okay, how's he saying it wrong? Because I learned that I occasionally say it wrong. And so, Phil, if you could help me, is it nuclear or nuclear? Or how do you pronounce it?
Well, I say nuclear. And what I know is it's not nuclear, right? That's
okay, not nuclear. Okay,
we don't have that extra U between the C and the L that I think President Bush was fond of putting there. But I'm reminded of Star Trek IV, where Chekhov is asking the cop where they keep their nuclear weapons, right?
Nuclear weapons.
And he thinks it's a pronunciation problem, right? Nuclear vessels, right? I think as long as you can say vessels, we should be okay, right? Although I don't think we'll get into the naval aspect. Actually, we do have a story that kind of gets into that towards the end of it.
And nothing at all suspicious about a guy with a Russian accent in the late 80s asking, where did we keep the nuclear weapons?
Russian accent. Excuse me, where do you keep your nuclear vessels? Yeah, that's not odd at all. The great thing about that scene, it's just a wonderful movie anyway, right? The great thing about that scene is that San Francisco cop has seen everything, right? He just stares him down, right? He's just like, yeah, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, he just nonplussed.
He just stares.
Too many years on the beat there, Ed.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, so here we are. Let's do this thing. We're gonna start with the most familiar form of nuclear power. The form that we use, the kind that that is in the nuclear power plants that are in operation anywhere in the world. I think that anyone's using nuclear power, right? This is what we have,
right.
Nuclear fission reactors. That's what we have here in the U.S. That's what's used prominently in places like France and in China and other parts of the world. So
and notably in Japan, where they had their difficulty, right, recently.
That's exactly right. So what's the future of nuclear fission? We've kind of heard our whole lives. Actually, I can remember, I'm old enough that I can remember seeing films in school and stuff where we were told that it was the future of energy. And
yeah.
I got to see that turn around to, well, this is a big mistake around the Three Mile Island period in the late 70s. And this is something we're moving away from. And so it became something
right.
in my life that we had adopted and we were all gung-ho about that went to something that we were not confident about at all. And I think there haven't been a lot of nuclear plants built in the U.S. in the past few decades. It's not, you know, fission reactors is not something that we've hotly pursued. So is there a future for that technology? And if so, how is it different from what we've seen up to this point?
There is a future for it, and but it's going to be important, Phil, that that future plants that are built, you know, the people that are in designing them and building them internalize the lessons that have been learned, right? From
right,
you know, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and I'm sorry, the name escapes me, of the Japanese disaster of the place there.
Right. Go ahead. It's okay. It's Fuji something.
It starts with
a
K.
I can't
okay.
Say
anyway,
off the top of my head.
Those disasters. You know,
Fujiyama. It's Fujiyama. There it is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Those disasters. You know, it's obvious that there's a risk associated with power, and one of those risks are meltdown. And what we saw full blown both in Japan and in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, or actually was the Soviet Union when it happened. Anyway, what we saw there, and then you know, almost a meltdown at Three Mile Island,
right.
It's you know that we need, obviously, if we're going to do this, we need to take that those lessons to heart. And the thing is, we do need to do this. China is choking on its own smog, and there are places in the United States that just, I mean, in certain cities, I think one of the worst is Denver and other places like that, right? And that may not be from power production, but there are places that we have our own smog problems as well. And that's from coal, but China, their problem is strictly from coal power production. And
right.
They really, you know, and anybody that's that is concerned about green energy needs to consider nuclear. Anyway, and why is that? Well, you don't have the greenhouse gas problems. You're not putting out all this smog and everything else. So what could be done? Well, the one big one is thorium. We could go the thorium route, and it reduces the risks of meltdown because thorium could be done with you could have actually the fuel inside the reactor with thorium could be and should be actually liquid. And so
right.
if it looks like you're about to have a meltdown, you could literally wash it down, you know, remove it from the reactor chamber quickly, because it's a liquid. You can't do that with a solid, and
right.
And that's what creates the problems there. And you know, there's also thorium is just a really bad. If you're interested in making a nuclear bomb, thorium is just not the route to go. And so, those of us who think nuclear proliferation is, I'm having trouble pronouncing things this morning.
Come on, three times fast, Stephen. Nuclear proliferation. No,
okay. Anyway, if that's a concern, obviously thorium is the route to go. So
right,
you know, because although there is a point in the process that it creates fissionable material. Again, it's liquid, and it would be it would be difficult to get to it. It's just not It's not the stuff that could be used easily to make a bomb like a uranium or plutonium plant would be. So
right.
For lots of reasons, thorium is the way we ought to go for fission plants going forward.
Well, this is one of the big I don't know, advantages, I guess, if this is the right word. One of the things that drew us to nuclear power in the first place is that you've got chain reactions going on. You've got you've got the transfer of energy breeding the transfer of energy. That it's, you know, it's a process you can get going and you get a lot of energy out of the deal, and that's awesome. The risk there, the danger there, is the buildup that can occur. And as you point out, when you're using this metallic solid fuel, this idea of all of it overheating and then melting down and then becoming completely something that's uncontainable was a risk that was always built into nuclear fission power. I mean, and that's a significant risk. I remember the big movie that came out right before Three Mile Island, I think Jane Fonda was in it, and I can't remember who else, was called The China Syndrome. And,
right,
you know, the idea they were exploring in that movie, not a great movie, but interesting idea they were exploring in that movie was that if
good timing on the movie,
it was amazing timing. Yeah. The fuel melts down in one of these plants and nothing will stop it. It's just going to melt right through the surface of the earth all the way to China. I mean, that was the thinking, obviously kind of a North American, you know, centric view of the world to call it the China Syndrome. But the idea is you've got this unstoppable mass of stuff. And then we saw it actually happen, sadly, tragically, a few years later in Chernobyl in Ukraine. It actually did happen. And it's, you know, this terrible dispersal of radioactive material. I mean, just ruin, right, that occurs. And
yeah,
it was terribly, terribly dire consequences to having that process fall out of control. But as you point out here, that big risk is essentially mitigated here, right? I mean, you've essentially eliminated that risk because you don't have that core that's just sitting there that you can't do anything with, right?
Right.
The big,
and
the
you
big
could
problem
actually have it.
Was,
you know, one of the things, if in a disaster, you might not be able to pump water into the reactor to keep it cool. If you
right,
lose your pumps, you know, that's
right,
that's a risk. Here, I mean, you could actually have it a gravity fed system where, you know, gravity itself allows you to drain the fuel away from the reactor into a safe holding area, you know, and not even require a pump. If you're having, you know, you just pull the switch and there it is, it's outside, you know, it's not, it's no longer getting hotter. And so that's great. And there's, you know, there's actually a couple of other things with thorium.
Yeah.
Uranium mines are difficult, though. You have to dig deep into the, into mountains to extract uranium. Thorium is kind of a surface mining kind of process. And it's very, while uranium is a bit rare, thorium is everywhere. And it's so it's easy to obtain, and also nuclear waste. It's the Chinese researchers say that the amount of waste a thorium reactor would produce is 1/1000th the amount of waste of plutonium or uranium plants. And but U.S. researchers are not quite so optimistic. They say it's merely a 1/100th, you know, two orders of magnitude less. So
right. So 1% of the waste, but you would have more waste because we're not really building plants now, right? If we were to go,
yeah,
we were to go whole hog into thorium-based nuclear power, you can just picture, you know, suddenly we're building fission plants all over the place, and then we are producing some waste. And it's interesting that you mentioned waste, because that was the other thing that was always talked about before meltdowns became the big issue. It's like, what do you do with the waste, right? So that is that is a concern with nuclear power.
I think that concern, right, was always a bit overblown. The amount of waste produced by these plants is minuscule. People have this idea that, I mean, it's just truckload after truckload of this stuff that we can't ever do anything with. That's just not the case. That's not the amount of waste that was produced, even with a uranium plant. And if we were doing something with thorium, I mean, we're talking like, this 10 by 10 room, let's we can hold this nuclear waste for the last 100 years, you know. it will not be a lot of waste to deal with. You know, dig deep into a mountain and create a holding facility, and you know, I think you're good to go then. You're taking care of the problem. So
now, one of the things that has been in the news recently is that the Chinese are looking at both thorium-based nuclear power and also just other new approaches to do fission reactors. There was a headline, I think it was last week, talking about China's plans to build the world's smallest nuclear power plant. We've talked about these before.
Right.
Potentially, you could have these very small, self-contained nuclear power plants, as is described in the article we've got linked here, that you could fit in a shipping container that would provide energy for years. It's like a huge battery. And, you know, obviously China's big in shipping anyway, so you think about one of these big container ships. If one unit the size of one of the containers on the ship could provide all the energy the ship needs, that's pretty awesome, right? I mean, that's a useful thing. Also, if you could load a ship up with those, you could send power to all parts of the world. That would be a very convenient thing. China seems to be looking at these kinds of things more strategically than we are, right? This is not the sort of thing, unfortunately, that you hear coming out of the U.S. We don't hear, you know, U.S. companies saying, "Hey, we're going to build one of these plants and you know, one of these." Shipping container-sized mini plants. Although we know that we could have them here, and each one could power like a whole subdivision, right? We've talked about that in the past. And similarly, I don't know that anyone in the U.S. is talking about us going thorium reactors, but China's talking about it, right? Their plans are on the books to get there.
Right. Well, and also India. India is doing it because they have very little uranium, but plenty of thorium. And thorium, again, can be found most everywhere, and it's very plentiful and easy to get to. So that's the reason India is very interested in it. And China, of course, they need to move from coal quickly, and they know they do. They've got a problem. They're going to try to address it. And thorium looks promising, and maybe these small reactors. You send out one of these things, and then power the entire community for a period. Yeah, I think what 5 or 10 years, something like that. Phil, is my understanding.
Yeah.
And then you know, you just send them. You could quickly ship it back to where the factory it came from. And I think the way they install these things is interesting. You take basically what amounts to a shipping container and then bury it in concrete, and hook up your wires and forget about it. Basically,
set it and forget it, as we like to say.
Yeah, until it runs out of energy, and then you would apparently you'd have to go in and then extract it somehow and then ship it back and replace it. But that's it seems like a doable process. You know, Phil, we in the United States have moved away from it, but there was a time when, you know, we could build a nuclear reactor. Just, I mean, once you're up to speed in the process, we could handle this. If we wanted to go all nuclear for our electricity, we could do so in short order. Back during the Cold War, we were building nuclear subs. We had, for a period of time, a boat of the month club, basically, right?
Yeah.
We were building these things at a rate of one a month. And of course, they were powered by nuclear reactors, each of them. So, you know, you could you take about a 50 or 60 of these reactors. You don't even need the whole sub, just the reactor. And you've substantially taken care of the electrical needs of the United States. So...
And if you're looking for the zero carbon emissions way to produce energy for the whole country, this is it, right?
That's it.
You know, not to go back to that topic because we talked about it a couple weeks ago. But that's one of the big advantages. So here's the thing. Okay, maybe the whole world isn't going to go nuclear. It'll just be China and India, right? That would be a huge portion of the power produced in the world if they moved in that direction. But nuclear fission is not the only game in town. And one of the reasons that we talk about other forms of energy may not get off the ground is because solar is coming on so strong. But there is another nuclear option that may come online and that may prevent fission from becoming as widespread, because if we could get this one going, and we've been talking about getting this one going for a long time, it would be better than fission, and that's nuclear fusion. But as we've mentioned throughout the life of this show, nuclear fusion has been about 30 years off my whole life, right? I've always heard that we're a few decades away from actually making fusion power work in a practical way, and that seems to be the perpetual state of the art. Or is it? Where are we now with nuclear fusion power?
Well, you know, they decommissioned the research fusion reactor that we have in the United States, the Tokamak nuclear fusion reactor that they were using for research purposes, and they just said, okay, we're cutting off your funding. And, you know, you think that's terrible news. Well, what's interesting is the Hail Mary that the researchers threw in the final days before the funding finished. They basically said, okay, well, we're about to lose this thing. Let's really take the risk that we normally wouldn't take and really crank this thing up and see what we can do with it. And they got some interesting, some interesting values out of it that make the researchers believe that this thing is closer than they had thought before. Of course, now we no longer have the research reactor to do it with, but there's other research reactors in the world, and
right.
No doubt they've got their hands on this data. The three factors that you need. That they keep track of, or the plasma particle density. That's the thing that's holding. That's the thing that is the power, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's confinement time. You're using magnetic confinement in most of these, and it's temperature. How hot they're getting it, and if you've got certain values for each of those three things, the triple product is what they call it. Then the energy released in the reactor exceeds the energy required to keep the reaction going, and then you've got something. That has been the holy grail of the research,
right?
And so the previous record was 1.77 atmospheres, the amount of pressure they had, and they were able to increase the pressure substantially in their final go. And so they may have a record that will stand at least for 15 years, because there's the next research reactor coming online will be in France, and that's not for another 15 years, Phil. But any rate, I thought it was interesting that the very act of cutting off funding may have advanced the state of the art, because it put a deadline on it.
And, right. And suddenly they got results that they hadn't achieved previously,
in years and years of work. So,
right,
you know,
right, but not enough to keep the program going. That's interesting. Well, one of the things that we hear about on the nuclear horizon, and we'll see, you know, now that we've got the future of nuclear fission power in China and India, and it sounds like elsewhere in the world is going to be handling fusion, unfortunately. But one of the things we hear is that there are other options for doing thermonuclear. That have not, even been tried out yet, right? There are different fuels. There are different ways of doing it. In our remaining few moments here, how does the future look for that? Is anyone actively exploring, trying some of these different fuels, or
Deuterium is a fuel that can be extracted from seawater, and it's an inexhaustible supply. It's just so much. I mean, you know, there's so much deuterium in the oceans of the world that we will never, ever, ever see the end of that. That's all the energy we could possibly need, want for the foreseeable future. But here's the issue: it's not the perfect. Fuel for fusion reactors. It turns out that helium-3 is the perfect fuel. And in reading for this show, Phil, I learned something interesting. We don't have helium-3 on the Earth in any appreciable, amounts.
And helium-3, we should note, is an isotope, a helium isotope, right?
It's a helium
like
isotope.
A metallic
version. Very, very little of helium. On Earth. We have some helium on Earth, but not helium-3 in any appreciable amounts.
Right.
But it's very plentiful on the Moon, and the very reason we have no helium-3 on Earth is also the reason it's like a very good potential fuel for these reactors. We have a magnetic shield. I mean, the Earth is protected by a magnetic field, and that magnetic field keeps helium-3 off the Earth. It's, the sun is constantly bathing the Earth and the Moon in helium-3, and we don't end up with any of it on Earth because of our magnetic field, but the Moon gets lots of it, and that's also the reason that it would be a great fuel. It could be magnetically contained within the reactor. It doesn't have this. It doesn't have a charge that would create problems with escaping the reactor. And so it is the good fuel. And even though we have an inexhaustible supply of deuterium, we may end up, Phil, seeing helium-3 being used in these reactors first because it's easier to use it in a reactor. And the Chinese seem to think so. They're actively pursuing getting helium-3 from the Moon. They're going to use even before they have Chinese astronauts, taikonauts, on the Moon. They're going to get some back to Earth by way of probes, and they're actively pursuing that right now.
So even as they're making plans for widespread deployment of fission, they're looking at the real potential, the real future for fusion reactors with helium-3. And I got to tell you, the thing that's most exciting to me about helium-3, and we've done whole shows on it before, is that in addition to possibly answering all of our energy needs, finally making fusion power a practicable thing and giving clean, abundant energy to the planet, is it's this really good reason to have kind of space commerce going on, isn't it? That's, helium-3 creates a market for doing something out in space because you got to go to the Moon to get it.
That's right.
So if you
to me, that
want,
that may not be a bug. That might be a feature, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that's perfect. We could solve our energy problems by. It's kind of like when we talk about building satellites in space that could just be big solar collectors and send power back. That's good too, right? Because it requires us to develop space infrastructure. But this is even better, right? Because this requires us to actually put a presence on another body in the universe, the nearest one, the Moon, which it turns out has a fantastic, it's almost like it's a setup, right? The big solution to our energy problem, why it's right there on the Moon. So all we got
to
do is get good at
you just have
flying
to take
through
that
space.
Step. Yeah, that small step, right?
take that small step and start mining the Moon for helium-3, bring that back and start powering the Earth. Well, those are great scenarios. I wish that we could say that the U.S. is on top of them as China is, but for the time being, it looks like we're gonna be following China's lead in all of our nuclear options. So wish them well in bringing some helium-3 back, and the results that they get from that, we can only hope will.
Oh, it's good for humanity. It hardly matters who does it, Phil. But in one way, I want my country to be involved in this. So, anyway.
I'd like to see us take a look at that and say, yeah, that's a way we need to respond to. And that, let me tell you something, that would be a nuclear, not arms, nuclear energy race that I think would be truly exciting. And we could really have some nuclear options that would be worth considering. And Stephen, with that, can you believe it? We're completely out of time. Well, this has been educational and fun. Always great to check in on our energy options. We're going to be back on Wednesday, and Wednesday and Friday we're going to be talking about aliens. So you're going to be want to be with us then. Thank you, Stephen. It's been great talking with you. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.